Welcome back, everyone, to this month's research brief. Today, we are going to talk to a community-engaged scholar that centers her work with Black communities and families and their importance to engineering engagement. She is an associate professor of industrial and manufacturing systems engineering at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. Welcome, Dr. Delian Smith.
Welcome. Yeah. So, would you mind telling us about your journey to and through the field of engineering education and really about how things have kind of come full circle for you?
Well, I will. And I first want to thank you all for having me. I'm so excited to be a part of this just amazing podcast. So now let me tell you a bit about myself. I am from Detroit, Michigan. So I currently work in the city next door to the city that I am not only from, but I live here now. Engineering education, I've always wanted to be an engineer as a child. Growing up in Detroit, we're the Motor City. Often people think about Henry Ford, the assembly line, $5 day, engineers and working in plants and just everything you can imagine. And so from there, you know, having family members who worked in various capacities in the car plants and the big three, I was just exposed to it as a young age. The currency in our family is education. And so just looking at learning how to look at systems and navigate them, leveraging our education was really important. And that led me, once I started at University of Michigan, Dearborn, and I earned my electrical engineering degree, but I started asking questions about, especially as a Black woman, why was I seeing some of my peers not persist past certain years? And I wonder, you know, I talked to the dean about it. I was talking to people. I was trying to work with faculty who were interested as a NSBE president that gave me opportunities to kind of try to create programming to support my peers and myself. And that's kind of when I first got it started, was asking that critical question of like, why do we see this many students starting now and I'm not seeing them finish at senior year? I'm not seeing them walk across the stage, or as many. And then I went on to the main campus, the University of Michigan Ann Arbor, met up with Shanna Daly. And I basically was thinking, I'll just do an industrial and operations engineering master's. Heard about engineering education at this point, and that's when I said I kind of got my hands dirty and got it. Like, I got my first pub there with her. We were exploring like creativity work. But, you know, the pathway to engineering education at that time was not very clear at University of Michigan. And I had heard through Shanna about Purdue's program. And then I went to Purdue, did the PhD and met you all. I met a whole bunch of people there. And that's kind of how I journeyed through engineering education.
How'd you get all the way back to where you are now? We got to come full circle.
Yeah, I did. I actually had no plans on doing that. My plan was to get this PhD, avoid the academy, go to the Hill and do public policy, do STEM education policy. And I had tried, I actually had tried to get a couple postdocs, and literally one of my applications sat on someone's desk for like 9 months. And when I kept inquiring about the application, no one knew where it was. And then I ended up going back home for a visit. And the dean at the moment, Dean Tony England, invited me to, you know, share some of the vision he had for the college. I had no idea why he was inviting me. Like, who am I? I'm just an alum. Mm. And he shared the vision. And then he also shared his desire for me to consider coming back and joining the faculty and doing the research that was important to me. So I ended up coming back to the same university that not only I went to undergrad, but when I was a kid, we did outreach programming at that same institution in the computer lab. So kind of cool.
Very cool. Yeah. So speaking of research, can you just tell us a little bit about your research focus?
Mm-hmm. So it's evolving, and I think I'm starting to land, which is cool. So I do my research is kind of at the intersection of Black family studies, engineering design knowledge and its application in the classroom, and also in informal learning environments. So it's kind of anything that connects any of those three, but sometimes I do research that might just have one you know, one of those three topics, and I'm just asking questions about that. They're very important topics to me. I think from a Black identity perspective, these questions arise because I look at what's happening in our community. I like to use asset-based frameworks. So thinking about like, what have we been contributing over time as a Black community? And how can I like root that? How can I provide the scholarly evidence to continue like to build upon that in engineering education? There's evidence for like Black family studies outside of engineering ed, but how can I really be a contributor to the engineering ed scholarship related to Black families and Black communities? Especially because a lot of scholarship, unfortunately, has this like deficit narrative around Black communities having lack, not having enough, not, you know, just that narrative we always hear. Mm-hmm. I want to be a contributor to the asset-based perspectives. And so they're just, as I think about this work, it excites me, even as I think about looking at what engineering knowledge looks like in Black communities. And then when I look at informal learning, it's not restricted to just, I think we look at like out of school time or extracurricular, but I also look at museums. I think about community centers. I think about some people are exploring churches. What does it look like to do engineering in a church community or a faith community? And so I look at families and households. Wherever families are is where I kind of want to start asking these questions and learning more.
Yeah, good stuff. So you told me about maybe why you care. Why do you think others should care?
Mm-hmm.
About these kinds of topics. And yeah, I'll let you go with that.
Yeah, that's such a good question. I will start with the story, and I have lots of those. But I remember as I transitioned into being a faculty member, one of the first classes I had was the traditional intro to engineering seminar course. And I had, as most faculty do and should, have flexibility to create it into the course you envision it to be. But I was discovering that a lot of my students who came from lower socioeconomic status households and my Black and Brown students were saying that they didn't feel like they had anything to contribute to the classroom, that they hadn't had like formal engineering experiences. And so you could tell in the classroom when they would not answer as many questions. They would, you as you would talk to them, if I would press in a little bit, they say, well, these people obviously know what's going on. I have no idea because I didn't do insert like name of organization like First Robotics or, you know, any of these programs or Project Lead the Way. And so I started to realize that first I knew experientially that they probably did have experiences that weren't labeled engineering, but they had knowledge that they could use and they were drawing upon or could draw upon. But I also realized that if the college could do a better job at connecting their experiences from pre-college, whether they were formalized or informal experiences, to the classroom, that they might actually see improvements in retention, improvements in sense of belonging, improvements in graduation amongst groups that they historically had not been doing well at supporting. So I think colleges and institutions should care, because this work isn't just like that feel-good diversity work that people try to do, but it actually has implications for how to design curriculum and programming that supports students that universities haven't always supported very well, particularly in this case, Black students.
Thank you. I mean, so you've talked about, you know, your research being focused on Black communities, Black families, engineering knowledge, design, informal learning. Can you tell us a project that blends those research interests?
I have the project to tell you about. So.
Yay!
So, I'll share about, there's a few, but the biggest one that people might be most familiar with is my NSF Career Award, which I got through the AZEL program. And this project is really cool because it allows me to actually work with Black families in different environments. So we're in museums, we are at schools and after school STEM nights, and we're online using some of our online modules. And through this project, we get to explore like how engineering practices emerge in these design experiences within families. And I get to learn how to, I've developed as a community engaged scholar working with these families. A lot of times we kind of, I think we start, some people start with this, the families are your participants, get them, get your data. And through this project, I've been able to be transform my thinking in terms of like working, not even just with, but learning from the families and what their needs are and developing research studies that actually meet their needs. And that's one of the projects that I'm doing that I really love. And it's about halfway through that project. And I have some others. I'm thinking about how do we help teachers who are working in like the Detroit metro area, primarily serving students from historically underrepresented groups. How do we help teachers increase their confidence in teaching engineering design in a manner and at the intersection of even sustainability so that when these students are being taught by these teachers, they can benefit from the confidence that teachers might have with these topics. We know there's a lot of literature that talks about if a teacher has lower self-efficacy or confidence in mathematics, that the students actually respond to that and their interest or confidence in mathematics might also be lower. And so what we're trying to do is if we can equip the teachers with the resources they need, both in the classroom, because a lot of these teachers are paying for their own materials, but if we can provide them with materials, physical materials, but also with the materials and the confidence to teach them the lessons, that we might be able to also improve or affect the trajectory of students moving through the school systems into our universities. So those are a couple of projects I'm working on.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the types of frameworks you're using for this kind of work?
Mm-hmm. So I have a few that I'd like to draw upon. One is one I've been leaning on for a few years. It's called Community Cultural Wealth, which was introduced by Tara Yoso. And it is, people might be familiar with the cultural capital framework by Bourdieu, but one of the thing challenges with that framework was it kind of creates these standards that some people will never meet. It's just you have capital or you don't. Mm-hmm. And what Yoso did was she says, well, within communities, especially looking at it from like a critical race lens, many communities have access to wealth within their households, within the neighborhoods, within the people that they associate with, that allows them to navigate societies or organizations or systems that were actually designed to exclude them. And so, and that wealth can be acquired. It can be, you can share it, you can leverage it. And so that's one of that's the framework that I've been leaning heavily upon. People might also be familiar with a similar idea, a notion of funds of knowledge. And in that theory, that was one that in my work with it, is often used in classrooms, thinking about how do you make classroom experiences more relevant to the cultural knowledge and how do you value the cultural knowledge that students bring into the classroom and embed it within the curricular design. And so as I'm moving forward, it's kind of this blend of those two. And you heard me, anyone listening, you've heard me talk about asset-based frameworks. So I really lean heavily on frameworks that are asset-based because it really helps us to center the family, it helps us to center the attributes that families and communities bring to settings. So another framework that I'm using that I'm leaning into more recently is this idea of rightful presence. And it's introduced by Angela Calabrese Barton and her colleagues. And this idea really reinforces the notion that particularly communities of color belong in science spaces. And if you take that lens from your work, you start to explore their interactions with the spaces, not from a deficit mindset of, you know, why they haven't been going or have they been contributing or anything that kind of suggests we look at the flaws or the brokenness. And more focuses on the fact that these families do belong. So since they belong, how do we center their voice, their experiences, their knowledge as we're exploring the topic? So those are a few theories and ideas that I've been leaning into.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. I'm intrigued and almost ready to pause the podcast so I can look up some of these folks. But anywho, I won't do that. Can you, I mean, you've talked a little bit about the theories that you're using and like the focus of your work. Can you tell us about some of the ethics that undergird your approach? You know, this high value of family, high value of asset-based lenses, like tell me about the ethics, you know, that you use to guide how you approach what you do.
Yes. So I will start with just personally when I was considering where to work. This might be helpful to anyone looking at post, you know, get your PhD, what do you do next? And I think about what's important to me. And it was important for me to live in a community, to live in a community that I wanted to serve and learn from. So I explicitly looked to go back to the city of Detroit and find a home there that I could buy so that my students that I was teaching in the classroom, some of them would know that I live not far from them, that I could volunteer and serve in the community and make connections and be a resource to my neighborhood. And so that, and not just the immediate neighborhood, but also the politicians in the community, the educators in the community, just families. And so that's a personal appeal for me. And then just to be close to my own family. But that also then dictates kind of my research lens as well, thinking about being a community engaged scholar. And I think that that is important because so often institutions have required, or even spoken or unspoken, you require the community people, the families to come to you. You require them, if they need to get resources, they got to come to the campus. And this is not, while we have public spaces and you can walk onto a campus, navigating a campus for the first time, knowing which office you're welcome into, where you're not welcome, all of that makes it challenging for families who could be first gen or maybe didn't finish or who don't have time. Maybe they're busy. And so how do we create, for me, how do I use my, what you call like my personal ethics about this? How do I use this to inform the design of my research agenda so that we bring the campus, not the campus culture for sure, but the campus to and their resources to the community. And overall, when I look at what I want to do down the road is I would like to kind of make that research to practice pipeline a much shorter timeline. Like if I'm working with my families, I would love to see that if we're working together on a project and I have results that impact them, that they get to benefit immediately from it. They don't have to go to a journal article. They don't have to go to the campus library. They don't have to find out what new strategy the university is using for recruitment. They're getting the benefit of that, of working with me or someone like me in the community.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Love it. So again, this podcast is about you as a scholar. I know we've done many of them about scholarship. So we're asking quite a few questions about you personally. So what are some things that you've learned from your work so far?
Mm-hmm. I am learning every day. So if I may share a story that demonstrates my most recent lesson, there are two. We were working on a project and in a museum, and I saw one of the students, one of the children working on a project, and we use low fidelity prototyping material. So when I say that, think even lower than what some people may think. We're thinking cardboard, scissors, tape, hot glue. And when you compare that, as we're working in the museum, they have to take, if they want to, they take their prototype and they walk through the museum with these more refined artifacts. And I saw as this child was finishing their work, they wanted to take the artifact with them to the museum. And the parent suggested that they don't do that. We're going to see other artifacts. Your work here is finished. And at first I was going to, you know, step in. My thinking is that prototypes are part of the design process. You're going to need that for your next iteration if you want it to continue, you know, to even encourage the parent to support this child wanting to keep their artifacts. I didn't say anything. We had an interview and I talked to the parent about their mindset around design, and we got to the prototype. And one of the lessons that I learned from this conversation is humility around working with families. And I at a conference recently where we talked about remembering that we only see snippets of time. These families know their kids. So while we may be making observations from theoretical frameworks and expertise we've developed, trusting still that if these families have allowed us into a very intimate part of their lives and just honoring that, And so me stepping in to correct or provide some direction was probably not appropriate at that time. And what I learned, talking about what I learned, was that I had not provided them with a bag to take their prototypes home. So practically speaking, it's not the best thing to walk around with loose paper and materials, even if it is an early prototype. But also, if we look at the cultural maybe complexities of like being a Black person walking through a museum with these really nice polished artifacts, and your child who has what could look to some people as something not so polished or trash or unfinished, there's this idea of like presentation. This has not come up with this particular case, but I'm just suggesting that we already have to be aware of how we move through spaces. And perhaps by providing a bag or a box or container that celebrates their work might help to alleviate some of the concerns about caring, you know, the quality of one's work compared to what they're seeing at the museum. So that's what I'm learning, is humility, learning even as things practically speaking, providing what people need, in this case, a bag, and also learning from the parents about their own families and their own children. Yeah.
Wow, cool.
There were many a time during your talk, by the way, that like if I could snap, I would have been snapping, right? Like I'm loving and leaning into this idea of you know, not just asset based frameworks, which I think you hear people say a lot, right? And talking about an approach of looking at the assets of a community, but to honor and to learn and to respect sort of the knowledge that you're gaining through your engagement with the community and these families is remarkable, right? And commendable. And I think something that'll really set you apart from a lot of scholars out there who are kind of talking about it, not being about it. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, lots of things came to mind as you were talking, but like, what's hard about doing this type of work? Like, what's hard about community, being a community engaged scholar?
Yeah. So I think there's, you said it right. It is hard at times. One is just developing the relationships, getting the rapport with the families, understanding the changing landscape of nonprofit organizations and communities and funding and their roles and what they're interested in doing. You know, that has been hard. Even for this career award, recruiting was hard for 2 years, and I had to really look within myself. It literally took personal reflection to figure out how to pivot and move in a direction that I call more successful than what I was doing before. Mm-hmm. And so I think that part is hard. But once you start to get your boots on the ground, spend time with people and understanding what their needs are, you know, which is one of the first steps in the design process, is understanding the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, defining the problem, and to think, you know, sometimes we still skip it. So I think that's the hard part. And even just, you know, the fact of humility. I think that knowing that, yes, I'm coming in and I have access to these resources and knowledge, but sitting myself down with people just to hear what's going on. So I think that's where I'll stop, and that's what I'll share. That was hard. It doesn't have to be hard. As you start to learn and develop a network, even if I'm from the city, I still had a challenging time with that, but I'm learning quite a bit there.
But you talked about being from the city. I'm going to get back to the script in a second, but like, in what ways does this kind of work challenge traditional ideas about what it means to be a scholar?
Mm-hmm.
Like what, the ways we represent knowledge, the ways that we collect data, whatever, like in what ways do you feel like you have to be a little bit countercultural and countercultural to like traditional ways of knowing and doing and being in the academy?
Yeah, that's a great question. And literally, I can now say this on the other side of tenure, right? But you have to position this work very carefully. Mm. So anyone who's doing community engaged scholarship, you have to be very thoughtful in how you write about what you do on your CV or communicate it to your colleagues and to people who will be evaluating you. You have to do some education. And so that's something I had to learn. And I'm thankful that at the University of Michigan, across the campus, across the three campuses, they had a resource for community engaged scholars to help them communicate the work that people like me are doing on our CV so that it could be seen as valuable. Because you're right, especially in traditional engineering disciplines, this looks, I call it like, it looks soft. It looks like it's not technical. It's the things you'll hear. You know, like the earlier question, what does this mean for us? You know, this is not me working in a lab. Your lab looks different than mine. And so I think I had to be really thoughtful about using the language and tying my experiences into publications. So if I'm one of the things, personally, I'm a volleyball coach. So I had to make sure that somewhere in my CV, you're going to see the publication, a conference presentation about STEM and volleyball, so that I can tell the story of how I'm connecting these things. And that's just super intentional. I just have to be really intentional in the academy about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for your candor.
This is like my favorite time of the podcast, in case anybody was wondering. Prediction time. Where do you see engineering education going? If you had a crystal ball and could predict the future of engineering education, what would you see?
Well, good question. I was taking notes this week at a conference to prepare for this question. So what I see is, you know, we're already seeing in the past, but this idea of like siloed disciplines of in engineering, I see it getting more blurry. And with engineering education specifically, I'm going to, you know, we have these wicked challenges that we need to prepare our future engineers to face, and they don't even know what the problems are. I see engineering education like at the intersection of each one of those challenges. I'm thinking sustainability specifically. So what does it mean to have like engineering education at the intersection of sustainable design, sustainability, and how do you define sustainability? Or ethics, or any topic that's like a big problem that we're having, healthcare, medicine. I really see that's the future, is exploring what's happening at those intersections and maybe narrowing in our focus area by area, topic by topic. I also was listening to someone who was talking a bit about like anti-science theory. And I even wonder what it means to define what engineering is in light of AI and the community perception of robots taking over. So the role of engineering education and educating the community about the role of science and engineering and people who do design work, I think that I could see that being a conversation into the future. And I hope to see if I could be more hopeful about the impact we're doing with, by doing research that specifically explores the experiences of Black and Brown, Indigenous, and just people across different spectrums, I hope that we can make some impact. Sometimes it does feel like our work is valued, but not applied, valued or not included. It's just celebrated, but not like taken to try to apply to fix the systems we're talking about. So I hope to see that we're making some pathways and breaking some you know, walls and glass ceilings that we've seen with our work in the past into the future.
I'm snapping again in my head. That's all I got.
Indeed. fantastic. So my favorite time is the name drop. You know, who should we be paying attention to? Are there any scholars that you're following, whether it's, you know, those that are well-established or new and upcoming that others haven't heard much about? Like, whose name would you like to drop, or names?
Okay, I have two. One, I just learned recently, haven't read the work. Okay, let's just be very transparent. But I was recommended to me based off of a notion that I've been playing around with about the roles of, how do we evaluate or better understand the roles of parents in families as visitors into informal learning spaces? You know, are they just visitors, or are they also people we can learn from and collaborate with in these spaces? So that name is going to be Ann Ishimaru. Ann, A-N-N, Ishimaru, I-S-H-I-M-A-R-U. And she has a book called Just Schools, Building Equitable Collaborations with Families and Communities. So that's one I'm going to be checking out. And then I have Natalie King. She is a recent career awardee as well, and she does work particularly looking at Black girls in STEM. And so I really want to, her work has been something that I've been watching her from afar, and it kind of complements some of the ideas that I've been playing around with. And so I'd encourage folks to check them out.
Fantastic. Thank you.
So somehow we've come to the end of this. But thank you for sharing your insights just about you as a scholar. And if anybody's actually looking for Dr. Smith's work in terms of publications or proceedings, you may want to look for Dr. Deleon Tolbert Smith. So Deleon is Deleon Tolbert, Tolbert hyphen Smith. You may find it a bit easier that way. So thank you again for listening to today's podcast. Until next time, remember to keep it simple,
but significant.